All right. That's recording.
Thank you, Charlie. It's May 3rd, 2018, and this is collective bargaining between the University of Central Florida Board of Trustees and the University of Central Florida Chapter of the United Faculty of Florida.
Okay.
So far, so good.
Okay. And I have draft minutes from the meeting of April 12th, 2018.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Looks good to us.
All right. So the minutes of April 12, 2018 are acceptable. And thank you, Charlie, for preparing those. I noticed from the emails that I read from Sherry and from you, John, that there was a couple housekeeping matters that you wanted to address. Yeah. I thought maybe we would do that right off the bat.
Sure. I think the first is, well, we can start with the easiest one, I hope. You see it, the retiree, do you have a preference for a name?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We didn't come up with a name, did we?
No, we just had some suggestions.
Yeah, we didn't really.
Silver Knights.
We don't love it. Like Golden Knights would be better.
The hockey
team?
The hockey team has a trademark now.
Oh.
Got to deal with Diane Chase on that one.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. Maybe you can talk it over at your first
podcast.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay.
Come up with that. I saw your point about the retiree thing.
Well, Silver Knights, too, kind of says, like, you know,
I know
Silver
I know.
Fox.
I had the same well, thought. But, you know.
And it doesn't apply to certain people, like,
yeah, I mean, I don't have a gray head on my head. Hair on my head.
Oh, I really want you.
Did I not just hand you the?
I did see that in sort of looking around that one university put people's middle initial in, but then I thought that's really awkward.
Yeah, so, and some people have long names.
And some people don't have middle names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a stack of those.
Yeah, I don't. I probably have it.
Oh, okay.
Give me a second.
Or it's in your office. If so, I can touch it.
No.
And we also need to organize a committee that's reviewing the Faculty Excellence websites.
Were they trying to contact you? Is it Scott? Were they reaching out to you?
Yes.
Faculty
Excellence has been trying to get names from you.
Well, I think I just got an email about that today, just a reminder. That's for...
They said that they tried a couple times, but if you got it today, that's great.
Well, I didn't say I didn't get it before. I said I think I got it today. So I'll look at that right now.
No problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't realize
today
that.
They've been contacting the president.
I told them they need to go to you, but they were like, no, we need to go to the president. So I was like, okay. Yeah. President's appropriate, but.
As long as it gets done, that's the main thing. So that, okay.
Yeah.
So you've got, your folks are chosen already. And
yes, but we don't know how many to include because they don't know how many you're going to put.
We were just going to include three.
You're going to put three on?
Yeah.
Okay, then we'll do three. That's no problem.
Okay, so you've got three covered. I figured you would. Yeah, good.
We just didn't know if we needed to start dredging down the
get more. The more people, the harder it is to schedule.
Right.
That's all.
And that's why we limited it to three. We thought between six people, we should be able to knock this out, and then it's easier on the schedule.
Almost exponential, the more people
you
add.
Exactly. So far, so good.
Okay.
It looks like you've got something else for us.
Yeah.
Excellent.
As promised, we asked us to put this in writing, and we did, so.
This is a response with regard to the impact bargaining on the revisions to UCF policy 4-403.1. Sherry, do you want to go through it?
Yeah, it's pretty much what we discussed last time, although I had time to get and respond to the number of face-to-face trainings that they felt like they could adequately cover. They said they would be willing to make the availability of one-on-one to promptly advertise the availability, because I think we questioned what that meant, technical assistance. Any employer required to develop and deliver such training or support shall receive appropriate adjustments as needed to their scheduled work hours or assignments, as we talked about that. And then we said we could not do 24-hour, 7 days a week courses, but we would do, well, of course, couldn't do technical assistance that much, but we would do Monday through Friday during normal business hours and email and chat support from 8 to 11 during evenings, weekends, and most holidays. I think we had talked about this language. We hadn't really nailed it down, but, you know, we're flexible on it. But if an employee's SPOIs can be shown to have been adversely affected due to gradebook issues and web courses at UCF, the employee shall not be penalized on their annual evaluation. And we're suggesting that we implement this in the 2019-2020 year.
Okay, and I think you told us that last time.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's basically kind of fleshing out what we had talked about last time. But it's always good to have it in writing.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So regarding like thesis courses, like when it's just like one-on-one, would that also have to be posted in web courses?
As of right now, yes.
Okay.
I do a meeting with Provost on Monday, and I will bring that to her attention.
Okay.
If that's still a major concern.
I know, Sherry, with the financial aid requirement, I know there has been some flexibility with certain types of courses that have to do that type of documentation. So my one suggestion would be is to kind of mirror that same flexibility with those types of courses, independent study, thesis, dissertation, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if I know I don't have to do financial aid, I know I don't have to record.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That's a good thought.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Not at the.
Okay, so when we take a caucus, we'll discuss this one. Did you have anything else that you wanted to give us?
Do you have anything for us? I guess we will all.
Yes, we do.
We can exchange some things and then.
Okay. So I keep a copy. All right, so this is a colorful one. No, just colorful, like Mike's tie. It's color-coded like Mike's tie.
Yeah, I see that. I'm going to actually put the tie on a piece of paper.
Which is a very nice tie. I love that tie. It's cool. And just by chance, it happens to camouflage itself in this article.
Is this proposal number two?
It's our proposal number two, but it's tracked from your proposal number one. So, the parts that are in purple are the parts that we've changed from your version. And I think your version had tracked our proposal number one maybe at some point, because there's a lot of common language in there. And so the main change is in lines, it's not a huge change, in lines 11 and 12, where in your original proposal you suggested keeping some documents like the faculty annual reports preserved in electronic format, And we just elaborated on that.
I don't think it was just difficult.
Come on in.
Can you get the sign-in sheet so that she can sign in? Thank you. Is there a reason, like, why you felt that you needed to be so specific? Because I noticed you don't have Excel files there. That's what bothers me. You're so specific, but...
Well, we're trying to capture file types that are commonly used, but if there are ones that you commonly use, then we'd be happy to add them. And what we're trying to do is make sure they're in formats that are searchable and that are going to be maintained for a long time and that are common so that...
Yeah, PDFs aren't typically very searchable. That's what surprised me, I guess, is that you would think Excel would be much superior to a PDF spreadsheet.
Yeah, one of the main things was not having...
PDF image files.
Right.
Yeah.
Image file
PDF
format.
Searchable.
Yeah. Well, you can unless you can't. Right. I mean, you can unless you're taking a photocopy of something that you don't have electronically, or it just.
I mean, what are the common formats that you have things in?
Excel and Word.
Okay, so DocX would be the Word.
And PDF.
And
but
PDF.
It just seems.
Yeah, we're just trying to.
You just said that with your specificity, you're taking out one of the most important files that I have.
We'll add it in. That's fine.
I just didn't see that.
No, that's fine. No, that's a good suggestion.
XLS.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
COPA keeps faculty annual reports in PeopleSoft.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not in one of those.
But it's exportable as something, right?
Yeah.
It could be exportable, but we just keep it in PeopleSoft. So it's not any of those. I don't know how you would label it.
That's what bothers me about specificity to that degree. I don't mind that it's mainstream electronic format. I don't mind that.
You want to add mainstream searchable? Would that help that get to where you are?
It's showing up as orange. Was that our idea or yours? I don't even know who.
No, that was that was kind of our second tier. So orange is kind of modifying our own modifications. Yeah,
correct.
Okay, we can discuss it. But I just wanted to understand the thought process for why being so specific about those particular files. That's all.
Well, it's more for guidance for folks who are actually going to put this into practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that here are the file types and they're mainstream files that everybody should recognize. So that's why Excel is fine.
Or mainstream is fine, right? The word mainstream is fine.
Yeah, well, that's our word, so as long as it's fine with you. The main thing is it doesn't wind up in some format that now no one can access, and then you've got trouble.
You get contracts in that PDF. What do you call it?
PDF image?
On the problem screen.
You can't do anything with them. It's
awesome. I have to submit that immediately because I can't do anything with them.
Yeah.
So why would you download that to a system that you know somebody's going to go in and potentially make changes to?
But at least with most of these, they shouldn't be making changes to those. But the main thing is that for them to be useful for people down the road, for whatever reason, to be searchable and whatnot.
Well, also, they're maybe using some of these documents for promotion, for instance. So it's like when you use the promotion and tenure system, you know, you're kind of restricted also on some of your file format uploads as well. That list minus Excel is pretty much matches what's available in the promotion and tenure system as well.
The rest is grammatical, John.
The rest, except for down in line 52, just specifying what we mean by the student perception of instruction.
Oh, so the red is also you?
That red is.
Okay.
Now what happened? Oh, yeah, the red is. This is when going from one computer to the next goofs things up.
Okay.
Yeah, so then, line 10, just trying to fix a time for how much, you know, how long to get things into the...
Where are you, line 10?
Line 10. So well, we have existing languages a reasonable time. We're suggesting, I think, last time we might have said one day or something. Now we're saying 1 week.
Okay.
Yeah, the other reds, like in 14 and 15, those were in our original version.
So if the chair is not around, like if they're on annual leave or something, Is that?
Well, at least in my department, the administrative assistant has access to the files. So
well, it does say, and it does say, and under such conditions as are necessary to ensure its integrity and safekeeping.
Okay. All right, so that means.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question about, and I don't know whose change it was, but it could have been ours. It could have been yours. Mm-hmm. But in 11.14, at line 30, we changed the word grievance possessive, to employees possessive. And I'm wondering, is that because you could have the UFF bringing a grievance for an employee? And then the UFF would be the grievant and wouldn't have an evaluation file? Or is that because I think what is meant in this section is that if I'm an employee and I'm grieving and I need to use my evaluation file in an arbitration proceeding to make a point, I can do that. But I can't go and reach somebody else's file. I can take another employee's file and introduce it, because that right to waive is to the other employee. Like, for example, if right. I wanted to say I was denied merit pay in my department and there are three other people who got merit pay and I think my evaluation file is equal or better than theirs, so I'm going to go to arbitration over this, I can't take their three evaluation files and enter it into evidence, because then that you're violating their rights.
Yeah, I think in this case the word "the" in front of it, you know, refers back to the singular, that person, which would be the
employee, employee who's at issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got it. I just wanted to make sure, because we were changing from grievance to employee.
Yeah,
I'm
also a little uncomfortable with that for the same reason. Because it appear I could read this as. You could get copies of anyone's evaluation file if you file a grievance. That just has that uncomfortable feel.
Yeah. Looking at it, we both have that in our proposal number one.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should keep the
status quo,
the original language.
I mean, I'm assuming, I can't remember why the change was made, but I'm assuming we're just trying to continue to revise it to have employee as the standard language. I mean, there's nothing, no intent behind it really, other than
I can see where it may be. Well, even if the UFF was bringing a grievance on behalf of an employee, the employee still would be cooperative and say, "I'm waiving." The confidentiality of my evaluation file so that the UFF can make a point at the arbitration proceeding. So it's always the employees. It's always the grievance.
Right.
Yeah.
It's always the grievance.
I think the main intent was just to move a comma phrase or whatever that's called to the end of the sentence.
Clause,
thank you. Like Nick said, put employees in there. It wasn't to change the meaning of the passage at all.
Yeah.
So we could go.
Okay.
It's kind of whichever your preference is.
Because I've actually had some arbitrations. I don't know if they were brought by UFF. I don't think they were brought by UFF. I think they were brought by people who were bringing their own, you know, but they had private counsel. But the private counsel would come in and say, like, most lawyers would say to prove a point, oh, you were denied tenure and someone else was granted tenure in the same cycle. You think you're better than them. And I want that file in front of the arbitrator so I can make a comparative point. Well, that's really, we have to fight that and say, you can't do that. I think the UFF understands it, but a person represented by their own attorney might not. And they might come in and make the argument that this allows them to have access to employees' files.
Well, let's make the language as clear as we can.
Yeah, let's go back to agreement, because we both had that in our original.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not
right.
Like it was something that we were.
No.
Okay.
And so that's the only one we have for you today. We were hoping we could TA it.
We might be able to. The other thing that I have is they have to be removed. Material contrary to fact have to be removed from the file within 24 hours.
Yeah, it's just to get, if you've got things that are inaccurate, they need to be removed, you know, as expeditiously as possible. So we're suggesting, you know, one work day, basically. You know, that should be all it takes to say, okay, yeah, this, whatever this thing is, it should be taken out.
Well, while we take Article 11 into office, we're going to give
take Article 20.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. To to take in the caucus. So you have something to look at while we're looking at something.
Two more, I guess.
Actually, could we take a caucus now for a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
For a little bit, you mean 10 minutes?
Yeah, 10 minutes.
All right.
I'll be right back.
Article 20, which is the grievance procedure and arbitration article, and I'll kind of walk through it, where we previously referred to president's response or president's representative. We've changed to university's response or university representative, and that first appears on line 22 on the first page, and then throughout. On 20.3, we make a something more, something I guess clear, but I don't think this is a change in how I've read the contract, which is that a grievance has to identify the term or provision, which is the article or section of the contract that is allegedly violated, so that everyone knows exactly what article and section of the contract we can look at to determine whether or not a violation has occurred and whether it can be remedied or resolved. The next language change is on the next page of 20.4, lines 55 through 60. And again, I do not see this as changing the meaning of the language that pre-existed as status quo. It simply it indicates that when there's a violation alleged of the contract, that the burden of proof of establishing the violation is on the grievant, with the exception of disciplinary actions and job abandonment, which is the current practice.
Okay, so can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
So in lines 57 and 59, in the status quo language, we've got parallel construction there, burden of proof. Mm-hmm. Is there any reason to not have that construction? Like, it says a duty of proving or disproving, versus in 59, the burden of proving the fact or fact. So is there an intent?
Duty to burden?
Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to figure out if that was intentional, or is there some meaning behind that? Or
I don't have a problem with changing duty to burden.
Okay. And is there, can you give us an example or some?
Yes.
Okay. You know where I'm going, Chuck. Okay.
There are grievances that are filed where there's, say, a letter of reprimand that's being contested. And the grievant is also alleging discrimination.
All right.
So this says...
So you've got two separate items in the same grievance.
Right. So the items that deal specifically with discipline, it would be the burden of proof for the letter of reprimand would be on the university, but it's not on the university to prove that they were discriminatory.
Right. No, I understand that part, but I was trying to...
Allegedly.
Yes,
allegedly, right.
Thank you.
I was just trying to figure out what was the intent of change. Like, burden of proof seems like it's a standard language that even common people recognize, and so what was the intent of changing, moving away from that? Is there...
Well, the example that I've mentioned is very real. It's an example we've been dealing with. If only one section or article of the CBA were grieved at a time, it'd be simple. But it's not, because we get examples of multiple violations, alleged multiple violations, some of which the university recognizes the burden of proof is on the university. But some in the same grievance, when there are multiple articles or sections that are cited, it's much more appropriate for the grievant to have to prove discrimination, for example, or that an assignment was arbitrary or unreasonable.
So are you asking about why we've changed burden of proof to burden of proving or disproving the facts or facts in...
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
So
what John is saying is why not say regarding disciplinary action and job abandonment, the burden proof shall be on the employer. That's what John's asking.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what the improvement or the change in intent is of substituting different language.
Well, I think for us it was just, that's when you get lawyers writing contracts. that's actually taken straight out of a law dictionary of what burden of proof is. It's the burden of proving or disproving facts in dispute.
All right, so it's just inserting the definition in for the term. Oh, thank you. Now I understand why.
What we're
all right,
talking
about. Yeah. I didn't recognize that. I was trying to figure out why was that, because that two seemed identical to me in terms of the concept. All right. Now I know.
It's a good definition, I guess.
The next change to point out is at 20.8 on lines 99 and 100. The language of the collective bargaining agreement allows the grievant to amend one time prior to the step one meeting if the grievance is filed at step one, or prior to the step two review if the grievance is filed directly at step two, because certain types of grievances can be filed at step two. We've added that additional amendments to the grievance so that after that time period has passed, additional amendments to the grievance may be permitted by mutual agreement of the parties. Because right now there is no language that would permit that. There's language currently in the contract on lines 191 through 200 that identifies which office is required to execute the request for arbitration. And it is currently the UFF president or director of arbitrations. And I know there's probably delays processing and sometimes to try to get the signature of those people as required by the collective bargaining agreement. So we're proposing some relief there on 199 by adding or designate.
Okay, yeah, and I think that also occurs at 196 and 197.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, 199.
Yeah, and then I think on 193 and 194, just making sure that I'm reading this correctly, you're substituting academic affairs throughout the document for the Office of Faculty Relations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There is no Office of Faculty Relations.
So now we move to the next page and lines 2003 through 2005. 205.
I struck this because we have only done this once since we actually embarked, and that was the very first contract. We made it to go and determine our panel. But we have a pretty standard panel, and usually when somebody dies, or drops off, because we have had that, the representatives from the university and UFF, if there's not enough people on the panel, if not 10 people, we just get together, usually even frequently by phone. I've had done this several times with Candy Churchill, and just look at who the available arbitrators are and agree, okay, we'll add this one. We don't like that one. Okay, well, you pick one, we'll pick one. So it's a...
Well, I think that language was critical when we did not have a panel and we needed to get together and create a panel. But now that we have a panel, do we really want to get together and redo
it? So this is an existing... Is this an existing panel that we've done here locally?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So there's not another panel that's out there at the state level or something?
No, at one time we, the university and the UFF, got together and created the current existing panel.
Yeah. And we've made some modifications to it by mutual agreement over the years, as I said, because some people have been retired or actually have had people die. So these are not the youngest group of people on these panels. So.
Let's go back to the Silver Knights thing.
Actually, we have an idea for that one.
Oh,
so let's make sure we come back to it.
Okay. And then, Thank you for reminding us. 20.9 on notice.
Hold on.
I'm sorry. It's line 274 and 275. So when we are... when we issue or file documents in a grievance process, we transmit them by fax, United States Mail, or any other recognized delivery service. Sometimes people expressly refuse to accept delivery, and we think that's deemed delivered when someone...
We get
something back
that says
I won't accept.
And
yeah. And then...
Just a second. So I just want to make sure I'm tracking this right. So the language that's in the highlighted yellow is new language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then
the blue is
also new language.
Yeah, because typically if we're having a problem, do we always copy the grievance representative as well as the grievance in these things?
Well, depends on who files it. If they're represented by the UFF,
yeah,
I communicate with the grievance rep. But if they're representing themselves, then the grievance rep gets a copy. So,
but in the case where, that's why we said either one is acceptable. If you get it and acknowledge it, then that's acceptable.
Right.
It's just like, you know. If your lawyer gets the documents...
You've got the documents.
I think that was yellow because we were open to a different way of expressing that. But essentially, if you deliver something to the door and you say, that's from UCF, I'm not signing for it, that's refusal to deliver. And that's, you know what I mean? Like, that's what that is. We're open to a different kind of way of expressing that concept.
Yeah, we understand the concept. I was just going back and forth, and it looked like that was new, and I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't highlighted for some other reason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And to be clear, receipt by UFF representative shall constitute receipt means in those cases in which the UFF is appearing as the formal representative.
All right, yeah, we'll probably have to massage that language to make that clear.
Right. So if the UFF is not a participating representative in a grievance, we would drop it on the UFF representative and say, the person you're not representing has just been served.
I don't know. I kind of like to do that. You find them.
And we have something else that's highlighted Under 20.10 on line 282, adding the word local, and is there, do you have anything you want to say about that? 2010, line 282.
Again, that's in yellow because we're open to another word for it, but we wanted to distinguish before we had some confusion about the UFF statewide kind of president and local. Local is the only word I could think of.
Or chapter president.
Chapter.
Or chapter.
Well, chapter's not, that's not bad. Of course, there's many chapter presidents, but okay. It makes sense.
Local chapter. That works. Local chapter.
Or the UCF chapter president.
UCF
chapters.
UFF chapter.
UFF, UCF.
Because if I deliver to UFF, you're probably not going to be happy with me.
No. And they're not going to be happy with us.
But the attempt was just to make sure that we understood the difference between statewide president and local.
Okay, and then you struck out 2015?
Right, but 2015, if you look at the last line, what we're proposing is just to move this in a reorganization to Article 19.
Thank you, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's the same way we did with the ADR. And we're actually thinking that we might need, I hate to say this, but we have the ADR right now, and we have the standard agreements. We might need another process for conflict of interest because the way we have, I'm not sure that this works as well. We use mediation for ADR because it's something you should get done quickly. And if you're doing something that's expedited, arbitration is not the path, it's not really very expedited. Those of us who've been to arbitration, those people who've been through arbitration, it takes much longer to get an arbitrator booked than it does to get a mediator. So we might want to think about when we get to Article 19, tweaking that, maybe coming up in another slightly modified form. I just raised that, put that on your radar.
Okay. So we were in the process of looking at the evaluation file article in our caucus, but we wanted to come back and go through this with you so that you would have the benefit of our thoughts on Article 20 while we're in our mutual caucus. But I don't want this to get away from us. So what's the name of the...
In the interest of, reuse, reduce, recycle. Mm-hmm. What about going back to Pegasus?
They're still using it, aren't they? The Pegasus.cc?
Well, they're still using the web server, but the email service has stopped long ago when we transitioned over to GroupWise.
Why did they stop using Pegasus? I wonder. I'll have to find out, but that's a good idea. Pegasus is a perfectly good idea.
And some folks in the room even suggested that might resonate with the older faculty who remember the days when we had Pegasus.cc or whatever it was.
Yeah, okay.
So they might look at that fondly.
What about the little astronaut?
The Citronaut.
Citronaut. Mike, now you're just causing trouble.
He's so cute. I wish he could have him. I like it better than Vinny the Vulture, for sure.
You Miami guys. Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
Only a little longer this time?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
You think 7:30?
Do you know what you're going to work on? Because I could send you this file electronically. Because remember last time you were scratching on our stuff, and then that, I knew that wasn't going to work. So if you're going to work on 20 right now, I'll send you this file.
Or do you want to just put it on one of these?
Yeah, did you already skip those? Did you already?
Not yet.
Okay. I can do that if that's easier.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
If that's what you want to work on, now, then I can do that. Okay. Article 20?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
We're ready.
All right, so.
Progress.
I really think this is the 20th slogan ever, and I don't care if it's on tape. If I tell it to the people who developed it, charge on.
We definitely need to find a different room. Where shall we start?
Wherever you'd like, John.
Okay, so you're tossing it over to me. So with Article 20, the grievance procedure article.
So you want to make sure it's discussed. Is that what you mean? Okay, gotcha.
So we'll give you a definitely give you a proposal for this one the next time, and we'll work off of your proposal here.
Okay, great.
To try to converge on it. So the one idea that we wanted to run past you, just so you know it's coming, is on line 274. We just want to add in some language that it's refusal to accept delivery to the correct address. So that
That's not refusal when it goes to the wrong address. That's not a refusal. That's a, unless your address is wrong in the system. If your address is wrong in PeopleSoft, that's not my fault.
Well, what we're worried about is I remembered a case with a friend of mine who got some notice and she hadn't been at that address in years.
Yeah, but it's your obligation to update PeopleSoft. We'll send it to the address in PeopleSoft.
Okay. All right, let's think about that.
We can still talk about it. That doesn't mean I'm foreclosing it. I just wanted to say that it's not always our fault that the address is old.
All right. Point taken. Point understood. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I know what I'm going to say.
Okay. And then the other part that we'll put in there, we wanted to run this by for your opinion too, is we've got this funny note, email is not an acceptable form of delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're thinking that we should get into the 21st century and allow email and electronic signatures the same way we do with a lot of other things, reimbursement, receipts, and things like that.
It sounds so great, and I think we tried this before. The problem is that the clock starts ticking the moment that the email goes to you. But if I'm sending it to Florida Zoologist, I can't get a receipt for when you got it. Do you know what I mean? So if I send
so you're trying to timestamp the receipt.
It's a timestamp problem. So okay. If you can find a way to get around that, I am more than happy to utilize email. I'm happy to eliminate as much paper as possible. But you understand the problem of timestamp. And it works both ways. I mean, the UFF also wants timestamps on things, so.
Why would you send it to the Gmail account?
Because if he's the grievance rep, he's acting as a...
Yeah, then it goes to my
Yeah, automatically. Because when I type in, when I send an email to you, it automatically goes. When I type in John F, it pops up at Zoology or whatever.
Florida
Zoology. Gmail. Yeah.
So every grievance rep always uses their own own email for this purpose. I'm not saying they're using their personal email, but way, I guess in a world where I can't go into your server and read all your emails, which UCF address belongs to us. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So the person who say they're not represented by a grievance rep,
they typically use their own personal address. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I've got that's a timestamp, I don't know if it can be overcome or not, if we can come to an agreement on that, but I need to know when that clock is ticking both ways.
Okay.
So that's something to think about.
It'll give us something that
If we could figure out a way to do it.
Okay.
Completely open if you can have a way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Open if we can find a way. Okay.
Email is not an acceptable form of delivery to me because I don't read my emails.
Well, in the past, we had some issues with
is that emails. What happened to that contract proposal we sent you in, whatever date that was?
Well, December 23rd? I try to read them. I try to read them, but there's only so many hours in the day.
I'm just teasing for the record.
All right. You found it, didn't you? You found the email after.
No.
The one from Madeline?
No, I've never
found it.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mason found it, but yeah.
Oh, Mason found it?
Yeah, he did.
He didn't tell me that.
Yeah, well, there was a lot going on at the time, but Mason's like, yep, there it is.
Oh, no, I'll have to ask him. I've never found it, so.
Okay. Well,
moving on.
We appreciate the proposal for Article 11. Nothing, except for what we talked about before, nothing is jumping out at us and giving us particular heartburn. We might have some language tweaks here and there. And we'll bring this back next time.
Yes.
Okay.
Good chance to get an TA on that next time.
Okay. Computer center.
I bet that's what it was.
Yeah. It was probably just those subdomains.
Yeah, it was the very, very first email. And I was just curious. I thought maybe a techie guy would know.
Never mind. I remember I had a student account with it.
I agree with you. I think it was computer center.
A long time ago.
Okay, so then that, I think now we're ready to go to the impact bargaining.
Yes.
Because we're crossing ourselves all over the place here. Yeah. Okay, so we just wanted to, as a reminder to everybody, that Sherry was going to discuss with the provost about the one-to-one instruction courses like the thesis and dissertation in those hours. And then you've already got a copy of our, so we're expecting to get something back on that. But in the meantime, to kind of move the process along, we gave you our second proposal.
Okay. I see.
So the only...
I had put in something that was duplicative. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, so the discussion was about, the technical support person is physically there, and so then they should be able to pick up the phone if the faculty member's having trouble. And then we just realized, if we just strike those words, then it takes that all into account.
You need to strike the word and also.
Mm-hmm. That's right, thank you. Yep, and. Oh, no, we need it. No, and from 8 to 11 during
and
evenings,
from,
weekends, and most holidays. Yeah, so we need
to
do the... Sorry.
On the next line.
Yeah, it's on the next line. Yeah. So hopefully that one's agreeable. If the person is there, they should be able to use whatever modality, and then we'll be okay. And then with the evaluations, once we started thinking about it, we said, this could affect more than just the annual evaluation. It's also all the subsidiary knock-on things. So it's just making clear that... It doesn't affect promotion, tenure, consideration for awards. So it doesn't have unintended consequences, or at least that it doesn't propagate endlessly through the system. That's our intent there.
What if we said shall not be penalized on any evaluation or awards process? Because there are other evaluations. There's SPE, CPE.
Okay, go slow.
Right.
SPE.
Yeah,
Sustained Performance Evaluation.
Cumulative Progress Evaluation. I like the condensing of evaluation and awards process is what you said, right?
Is SPE different from CPE?
Yeah.
Yes.
SPE is for tenure people. Yeah. CPE is primarily for pre-tenure.
Right. Okay, thank you. Thank you. So I'm sorry, what were you suggesting?
I was just repeating his words.
Chuck suggested any
evaluation
or award processes.
Something like that, yeah.
I wrote it here. Any evaluation and awards processes.
But we're coming back to you, so we'll see it.
Well, but if we can...
Mm-hmm. If we can do it, we can do it.
Yeah, the only thing I'm a little uncertain about is the word processes. Because I'm not sure it's capturing it. It's not that the process will be altered. It's that the outcome or the consideration. See, I'm trying to make sure that we don't have people misunderstand the intent.
How about evaluations or awards, period, then?
In consideration.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Evaluation.
Shall not be penalized or on there.
Does promotion count as evaluation?
There's an evaluation that leads to.
Now people are evaluated for promotion.
Use your evaluations during the promotion process. Yeah.
Right.
It's a tool. It's a piece of the puzzle, but it's not.
Yeah.
I would call them separate processes, especially since you use cumulative progress evaluations rather than annual evaluations.
So you want
any promotion, comma, evaluations and awards, yeah, but promotion shouldn't be first.
Mm-hmm. It flows better. We'll look at it, John.
Okay, you can see what, mm-hmm. what we're doing. We just want to make sure. I mean, I think you guys. Let's make this as clear as we can so no one argues about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get it.
Okay.
But we can't guarantee no one will argue.
We can hope.
Well, I mean, that's good. It looks like a lot of progress has been made on this.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Good.
So I believe that's all we have for you, right? Yeah, that's all we have.
Well, one of the things that we're going to do, we're going to talk about next time as sort of a tracks from Article 20 in grievances, we'll come in with discipline and have a conversation about discipline.
Okay. Yeah, we actually, we're intending to bring that article next time, so that's good timing because we'll have that ready for you. Perfect timing.
Good, perfect.
Nice.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Charlie, could I borrow your purple USB again? All right, thank you.
Are we bringing the blue one back, or what's going on? Like, did you get your audio recording?
Did you get it?
No,
did
I haven't.
Hold on,
okay.
Sorry.
What would they go to? You know, we couldn't find lodging.